Morning. A pleasure to see such a beautiful crowd on a legal holiday, a day we don't otherwise have work, coming to learn Hashem's beautiful Torah. I want to thank the Beis Medrash Committee for arranging for our legal holiday shiurim both last week and this week, and to thank our sponsors, the Grinfeld family, Shlomo and Avram Holzer, Sharon Yaakov Markovitz, Mindy and Henry Orlinsky, Nomi Nefilropa, Tzivia Nasi Rubin, commemorating the Yahrzeit of Yossi's mother, Bela Bas Yosef Yehuda Levashom, the Fama Danny Sachs, Naomi and Kenny Schiff, Leah and AJ Schreiber, and Gabriella Noam Spinowitz. I mentioned on Shabbos that there are two tools that the Torah tells us that we use when we fight. There's the cherev and the keshes. There is the sword and there is the bow and arrow. And Unklus and the Gemara tell us that there refers to two different types of tefillah. But we expanded based on the Meshech Chachma that there are times when we battle from up close and then there are times that we battle from afar. And certainly in the current situation in which we find ourselves, much of the battle of the Cherev is taking place in Eretz Yisrael. And the Keshes, we have the opportunity from a distance to do our part. And again, as you mentioned, based on the Meshech Chachma, it requires Kavana, it requires intent, it requires zeroing in on what specific things we can do in order to support Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael and beyond. And many of our moments in which we focus on that are the chesed and the tremendous, tremendous chesed and the outpouring of chesed, which has been truly, truly remarkable. And we have increased our tefillah on a daily basis. But sometimes the increase in Talmud Torah is a bit more difficult. It's more time consuming. Our days are very, very busy. But perhaps when we have opportunities such as this, when we're not otherwise working, and to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are going to fire those arrows and we are going to participate and do what we can with the Amud HaTorah, with one of the pillars upon which the world stands, and fire those arrows of Torah on a morning such as this, it should, Be'ezras Hashem, be a tremendous zechus for all of those in Eretz Yisrael and beyond. Our speaker this morning does not need much of an introduction. We have had the zechus of having him many, many times in our shul. His harbatzas haTorah, both in the Beis Knesset of North Woodmere, in Yeshiva, where I have the zechus of being able to give shir alongside Rabbi Leibowitz, and through YU Torah and beyond, are again very, very well known. And the fact that he takes the time to join us is something which we don't take for granted. And it is a b'kavod gadol. We welcome Rabbi Ari Leibowitz.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Satz. It's always wonderful to be here in Tinek. It's always wonderful to be here in B'nai Yeshurun. And it's very moving to see how many people come out to learn on a legal holiday to come and share some Divrei Torah. I always come and expect there are probably going to be four people there. And then I see a room filled like this. It's really just very, very moving. And it's a great credit to your community. You know, just about an hour ago, I was giving the Daf Yomi, but Bava Kama Daf Samach is today's Daf for those who haven't done it yet. And the Gemara talks about how someone was going to give a shir somewhere, and there was a debate about what the topic should be. That one of the Talmidim said that he should speak in Divrei Agada, he should say a nice drasha, and another one of the Talmidim said, no, he should speak in Halacha. He's known for his Halacha. That's what he should talk about. And we want to hear Divrei Halacha from him. And he started speaking in Agada. And the one that wanted him to speak in Halacha quieted him down and said, stop. No, we don't want that from you. Then he started speaking in Halacha. And the other one quieted him down. And he gave a mashal of a guy who's married to two wives. Is married to an older woman and to a younger woman. And his younger wife is pulling out all the white hairs from his head or from his beard in order to make him look younger so he could look more appropriate for her. And the older wife started pulling out all the black hairs from his beard or from his hair so that he will look older, or at least older than her, right? That's the point. And at the end of the day, he said, the mashal is, the guy ends up bald. He ends up, and no one wants the bald husband. I mean, they all end up with the bald husband, but no one wants the bald husband. And he says, so what are you going to do? You can do halacha. So he said, I came up with an idea. I'm going to do a dvar halacha that also is a dvar agada, meaning I'm going to pick a topic that relates to both halacha and agada. And I thought, wow, that is a That's a great idea. I wish I would have thought of that before 40 minutes before I have to be in Tina to give a shiur. I didn't. So we're going to do a Dvar Agada instead of a Dvar Halacha. Generally speaking, it usually goes, it's usually more Shavala Kol Nefesh. Now, one of the things I get to do, one of the privileges I have in teaching in yeshiva is that there's a little-known podcast. Now, normally when you say a little-known podcast, that is it's an insult because people who do podcasts, they hope that the world is listening. But this is a podcast that is not well-known by design. Reitz actually has a podcast that's specifically for rabbinic alumni. I don't think it's available to the public. I mean, you speak to me afterwards, I could probably sneak in. But it's not available to the public. Are you familiar with this, Yaron? Yeah, this Rabbinica alumni podcast. And I had the privilege just a couple of weeks ago interviewing Rabbi Elchanan Zon on the podcast. For those who are uninitiated and don't know who Rabbi Elchanan Zon is, he's a person who has headed the Queens Chevra Kadisha for many, many decades. And he's pretty much the country's foremost authority on Chevra Kadisha and Chevra Kadisha related issues. I can assure you that if you were to steal Rabbi Zatz's phone right now and you were to look for Rabbi Zon's number, it would for sure be there. And it would be in the phone of any rabbi in America. And it was an amazing thing to be able, when he spoke in my shul a number of years ago, I introduced him by saying that Rabbi Zon is the greatest Baal Chesed in America, both qualitatively and quantitatively. Meaning Rashi tells us that Chesed Shosim in Mamesim is Chesed Shel Emes. So qualitatively, it is the greatest Chesed. And quantitatively, it's all he does all day and all night. You call him at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., it doesn't matter. All day, all night, that's all he's doing. So he hates when I say that, but he's not here, so I could say that, so that's fine. Now, typically, when I give a drush, I always like to start with three questions, and usually the three questions relate to psukim or to mamari chazal. But there is a tradition that that when you look at the actions or the behaviors of tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim, you're supposed to darshan that also. That one has a lot to learn from the way that that certain tzaddikim behave. It's aligned with what the Gemara says in the Sefer Sukkah Daf Chav Ches, that afilu sichas chulin shel tamidei chachamim tzrichim limud. That lo lo yibol, the Gemara darshan's apostle, that even when a Talmud Chacham speaks sichas chulin, even when he says something that seems somewhat mundane, there's what to learn from. And therefore, even just the general anhaga, the general behavior of a tzaddik requires limud. So my first kasha is the following. If anyone here has ever met Rabbi Zon or someone like him, there aren't many like him. One thing that jumped out at me through doing this interview was, and through all my interactions with him, was that he is the most cheerful, pleasant, easygoing person you would ever want to meet. And that's like crazy, because when his phone rings, there's always death on the other end. Right, his phone rings at 3 a.m. It's usually not Mazel Tov, it's a girl. You know, it's usually, oh, so and so died, and we need your help, and we can't get the body out of it. You know, there's always some, and he's the most like cheerful, happy, easygoing, relaxed person you'd ever meet. So that's kasha number one. How could it be that somebody who deals with death all day is so calm and so cheerful? Kasha number two. I mean, Saul Reisman from Yeshiva Torah Vidas says that there's a game he likes to play at his Shabbos table. What he does is he says, he challenges the people at the table, try to find different names of parshios that have the same shoresh. The name of the parsha, the title of the parsha, there is a repeat shoresh in Chumash. So twice you'll find a shoresh that repeats itself three places in Chumash, in three different parshios in Chumash. But the very first time you have a repeat shoresh was this past week's parsha, was the parsha that we read this past Shabbos. Parshas Chaye Sarah, and then Parshas Vayechi, right? Two parshios that both have a shoresh of Chaye. Right, you get the game now, right? Chaye Sarah, Vayechi. Don't spend the rest of the time thinking about the two threes. Wait till Shabbos, you'll say it at your table, whatever. But in the meantime, pay attention to me. So Chaye Sarah and Vayechi both relate to life. And what are the themes of those two parshios? Death. Chaye Sarah is not about the life of Sarah. She's dead at the very beginning. She's dead right when the parsha starts. The whole thing is about the death of Sarah. Vayichi is not about the life of Yaakov Avinu. Vayichi is about the death of Yaakov Avinu and how he prepares for that death and how he instructs his children of what he wants to happen after that death. It's all about death. So there is such a concept in Chazal called Lashon Sagi Nahar that we sometimes speak in euphemisms because we don't like to say not nice things. So instead of calling something, saying a person is blind, we say he's Sagi Nahar, he sees the light, which is really the opposite of blind, but you get what we mean. Or sometimes Chazal will say, when we're talking about the Jewish people doing things that Jewish people ought not to do, we'll say, Soneim Shel Yisrael. It's the enemies of the Jewish people. It's not we're our own worst enemies. So in a certain sense, it's the enemies of the Jewish people. But really, we're talking about the Jewish people. But there must be something here that the two parshios that are both named after Chayim are both really about Misa. And a third question. One of the greatest challenges that people face in their emunah, in the Haloch Yelech of life, as a person goes through life and there are ups and there are downs and there are easy times and harder times. One of the more challenging things for a person's emunah is when dealing with illness. And it challenges the emunah not only of the chola themselves, but very often the people around the chola as well. And it takes a toll on everybody. Because when a person is ill, they're very often not in the best of moods. Medications can cause terrible mood swings as well. And it really is a very great challenge. So where did that come from? That we have this terrible thing called illness in this world. So it's a very famous medrash. Those who know me know that I try to be very sparing in the word famous when I refer to Maimar Chazal, because I never want to make anyone, I was taught by Rabbi Maurice Lamb, never make anyone feel bad by calling something famous. And then they're going to say, oh, I never heard that. I guess I don't know famous things. But this one, I'm pretty sure. A very famous Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. Come on, I don't know any Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. How famous could it be? Listen, here it is. The Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says, "Miyom shenivru shemayim va'aretz." From the day of the creation of the world, lo haya adam otesh v'chaya. No one would sneeze and survive. When a person would sneeze, they would immediately die. El b'kal makom shahaya, o bederech, o b'shuk. Wherever a person was, he's walking down the road, he's in the market, he would sneeze and he'd immediately drop dead from his sneeze. I have this thing that every time I go out in the sun, I went to last in like three seconds. So as soon as a person sneezes, so that's it, his life is over. And Yaakov Avinu said, that's a terrible way to go. And he davened. And what did he daven for? That people should get sick. That people should have illness before they die. We have this idea of illness that leads to death, of terminal illness that was introduced by Yaakov Avinu because he wanted it. He was interested in it. And the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar goes on to say that that's why Chayiv Adam B'Shas Itusho Lahodos HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shenepach Mimavis L'Chayim. That's why if a person sneezes, you say, Gesundheit, God bless you, Labriot. Meaning there's always some bracha that follows the sneeze. Where does that come from? You don't have other bodily functions that it demand an immediate bracha. Usually it's ew, you know, or something, right? So a sneeze all of a sudden and you get a bracha? Why do you get a bracha right after you sneeze? So says Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, it's because of the history of the sneeze. That's what sneezes used to be, and that's why we have this practice. So Yaakov Avinu changed the course of all humanity. He introduced us to this concept of illness. And the idea was that a person should have time before they leave this world to tell their family about things that they value and to leave a tzava'a, not only a will in terms of money, but in terms of what our values are. And a person should have an opportunity to do tshuva and put his house in order. And I understand there's great value in that. But I don't know, have we ever stopped and asked, is it worth it? I mean, we've all, unfortunately, in our life experiences, unless you're very young, have been around people that have suffered through terrible illnesses. And I understand dying suddenly, it's unfortunate in the sense that you don't have the opportunity to say all the things you wanted to say. I don't know, maybe I'm just coming from a rabbinic perspective. Go to a lot of shiva houses. You go to a shiva house, and leaving out age, assuming the age is the same, someone just didn't wake up one morning. They died peacefully in their sleep. What do people tell? What are the divrei nechama that people tell the avedu? He didn't suffer. He died a misas nishika. That it was just a kiss. It was just HaKadosh Baruch Hu just very quietly, subtly, just took their neshama up to Shemayim. What a bracha. Maybe you wouldn't say that at the Shema house, but that's the assumption. And someone who suffered terribly for years of illness, and they finally succumb to their illness, what do people say? What are the divrei nechama that are offered to the avelim? Right? Everyone knows it. At least they're no longer in pain. They're no longer suffering. That's the natural human and Jewish reaction to non-illness and to illness. So was it worth it? I mean, did we ever like take a step back and say, like, Yaakov Avinu's tefillah, his idea that we need to have this, that we need to have this concept called illness, was it worth it? Would we be better off just sneezing and that's the end of it? So I think there's an idea that can help answer all of these questions. And I think it's a critical idea for all of our lives, but particularly as we go through one of the more challenging times in recent memory for the Jewish people. It's hard to call it, you know, a lot of people say one of the more challenging times in Jewish history. But then like you think about Jewish history, there have been a lot of really challenging times in Jewish history. But certainly in our young lives and the amount of time that we've been on this earth, it's hard to think of more challenging times. I think there's a very simple yisod. We often think of death and life as two opposites of each other. They're opposite concepts. But in fact, that's not true. Because it's only through the knowledge of death, the awareness of death, that life has meaning. It's not a depressing thought. I'm not here to talk about death and just depress anyone. It's a very, very empowering thought. I mean, we know that our time is limited. And because of that, we believe that how our neshamos spend their limited time on this earth, whatever it's going to be, for zochet a little more than that, or have a little less than that, whatever the amount of time that we have on this earth is so important, because how our neshamos are going to spend all of eternity is determined by how we spend our time here. And in the expanse of history, the amount of time that we're here is very, very tiny. It's a blip on the screen. And yet how we spend that amount of time will determine how our neshamos enjoy all of eternity. And therefore, it's typical that as death nears, a person lives with a certain consciousness of their own mortality. And they tend to start living life to the fullest, right? In the secular world, what do they call it? A bucket list. Right? Things that I want to get done before I leave this world. In our world, we don't call it a bucket list. It's just living. Meaning we know that every moment of life is so important. Because every moment of life determines what our families are going to be like for future generations, the kinds of zechios we're able to amass for them and for ourselves. Now, Rabbi Zohn had an interesting idea this year. He asked me to speak on this video for National Chevra Kadisha, an organization that he runs. I know this isn't like a Chevra Kadisha breakfast or anything, it's not Zayinada. But he had an interesting idea that instead of talking about death and end of life and things like that, we should talk about Moda Ani. I said, Mehechitesi, you know, what does Moda Ani have anything to do with Chevra Kadisha? And he tried to articulate that it has everything to do with Chevra Kadisha, because Moda Ani is when we thank Hashem for another day of life. And it was like so obvious to him, and it took so much explaining for me to understand this. Like, what does Moda Ani, what is thanking Hashem for another day of life, have anything to do with end of life and with death? Moda Ani is the opposite. It's when you wake up and it's when you get to live another day. And if you think about it, when do we say Moda Ani? It's right after the closest encounter that we personally ever have with death. Because Chazal tell us that when a person is sleeping, it's 1/60th. How they got that ratio exactly, we had a book also a ratio of 60. Where they got that ratio is not so clear, but 1/60th of death. And right then, right after that encounter, we say, oh, Moda Ani, I get to live another day, and I get to live a day of productivity, a day where I can do something. And there's this growing body of research. Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, the Baruch Levracha, used to love to quote a study. I think it was called the Nun Study, where they tracked nuns over 70 years, something like 750 American nuns. And they tracked them over the course of 70 years to see how they did in life in terms of overall health and in terms of longevity and things like that. And they found that having a cheerful disposition, having a sense of gratitude for everything in life, having an innate sense of appreciation for life itself, can be a predictor of up to a 7-year difference in a person's lifespan. They couldn't find anything else, any other correlation, not family history, not where they lived, not, nothing else seemed to be a predictor of how long they were going to live than that sense of gratitude, than that Moda Ani. There's Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah, the Chafetz Chaim quotes the Gemara in Brachos Daf Hey. The Gemara says if somebody feels the tug of the Yetzer Hara and they're about to do something that's not appropriate, so what should they do? They should learn Torah. Baruch Kodesh Baruch Hu, Yetzer Hara, Baruch Lo Torah Tafu. Kodesh Baruch Hu created Yetzer Hara. The way to address the Yetzer Hara is by learning Torah. Great idea. Doesn't always work. So the Gemara says, okay, if that doesn't work, if you find that learning Torah didn't work out for you and you still feel the tug of the Yetzer Hara, so you should be Kari Kriya Shema. You should say Kriya Shema. The Gemara says, okay, what if that doesn't work? You say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and you still want to do the Aveira? So the Gemara says, Yizkor lo Yom HaMisa. You should remember or remind yourself of the day of death. Very morbid sounding Gemara. In fact, some of the Achronim say, you know, if that's the most effective way to defeat the Yetzer Hara, you know, why don't we just go straight to that, right? Why do we need to do Torah and Kriya Shema first? Meaning, don't pass go, you know, just go straight to the most effective way. And some of the Achronim say, well, because we'd like for people to learn Torah and say Kriya Shema, but also because that's so morbid, right? That's right where you're going to go is Yom HaMisa. It's a last resort. We don't want to always be thinking about that. But the Gemara says that's the most effective way. So the Chafetz Chaim is just such a beautiful deer. Well, the thing about the Torah of the Chafetz Chaim is, you know, in at least Chafetz Chaim al Torah, is his Divrei Torah were not fancy. They were not elaborate in any which way. You wouldn't look at the Divrei Torah of the Chafetz Chaim and say, wow, that's just genius. That's how he put all of that together. His godless was that everything was simple. He made even difficult things simple. That's what the whole Mishra Berurah was all about, was to make a very difficult limud of learning Shulchan Aruch and Poskim and try to simplify it as much as possible without losing any of the detail and any of the flavor. So Chafetz Chaim al Torah is such a simple question. The Gemara tries to be very precise in its wording. So the Gemara says, you feel that tug of the Yetzer Hara. You're about to be pulled to whatever your Avera of choice is. So what should you do? You should remember, it should have said, you should remember Misa. It doesn't say that. It says, remember Yom HaMisa. The day of Misa, remember death. Chafetz Chaim says, no, it's not about remembering death. It's about thinking about how would I live if I knew that today was my Yom HaMisa? What kind of decisions would I make? What would my life look like if I knew, if I had that clear awareness of my own mortality? If I understood just how short life was, would I be making these kinds of decisions? And that's the trick. If a person's having trouble focusing on Avodas Hashem, you live life as if it's the Yom HaMisa. And that explains, I think, why both parshios that are called life really speak about death. because life and death are not opposites. A person is truly alive if he knows that one day he or she is going to die. Much of the way that, you know, that much the way that we tend to work faster and more efficiently when we have a deadline, our Avodas Hashem tends to be more productive when we have a deadline. Rabbi Zohn is a cheerful person. Makasha on the tzaddik, he spends his entire life with the inescapable recognition of life's value. Like the natural thing to think about is, yeah, Modani, of course. Isn't that what Chevra Kadisha is all about? This constant recognition of the value. Nothing more uplifting than that. Yaakov Avinu requested illness because human nature is such that we don't always live with that awareness of our own mortality. And in large part, that's why we waste so much of our valuable time. We waste so much energy and sleepless nights on stupidity. We get caught up in squabbles that don't really matter. There are people that haven't spoken to family members in decades, but they don't even remember why. Because we get caught up in silliness. And then Yaakov Avinu requests that there should come a time close to the end where a regular human being, not a tzaddik, a regular human being will naturally have an enhanced awareness of their own mortality. If a person believes that death is the end, then the best way to go is suddenly. But if you believe in eternity, and you're just a regular person who has the regular Yetzer Hara that we all have, well, then it really is helpful to have the ability to think about things and to have that awareness. So what's the mile of Misas Nashiko? What's Misas Nashiko all about? That's really great for tzaddikim. For a person who lives their entire life with the awareness of mortality, with the awareness of how short life can be. That's Misas Nashiko is a great bracha. You know, I sometimes try to pay attention to trends. I get a lot of questions because that's my job. I'm a rabbi. And people ask a lot of halachic shayla, sometimes struggling with hashkafic issues. Eitzah, different things. I try to pay attention to like what the trends are at different times. Sometimes it's just like total coincidence. Like someone asks a very weird, obscure shayla, and I get that same shayla three times that week with no explanation, no relation between it. It's almost like HaKadosh Baruch Hu put an idea down in the world and said, send Walter. I don't know. But I was just in Los Angeles last week, and I was speaking in a high school, in a boys' high school, and I said to the young men, what question do you think I'm getting more often since October 7th than any other question? What are people struggling with more? And I'm sure you've had a similar experience, Rabbi Zatz has had a similar experience, and most Rabbanim. So the Talmidim said, the students said, oh, probably are people struggling with Emunah. I haven't gotten that very much at all. Maybe one or two calls since October 7th where someone is struggling with Emunah. People are too busy helping to struggle with Emunah. That hasn't been it. The call I get at least twice a week, every week. There have been weeks where it's happened every single day. Rabbi, my wife and I would like to come sit down with you. We need to talk about Aliyah. Have you noticed this? It's like, what are you, insane? Right? It's a war zone. People don't go to war zones. They go, wait, right? When Russia attacks Ukraine, like people are like, got to go to Ukraine. No, you got to get the Jews out of the Ukraine. Right? That was what the goal was. But there's almost like this recognition when there's an understanding of how short life is, an understanding of our own mortality, that people just like think about the direction of their entire life, the most life-changing thing they could ever think about. And that's what they start asking about. Is it right for everyone? Of course, you know, that's what they have a conversation. They try to figure it out, hopefully several conversations, to try to figure out what makes sense. But it's this amazing intuition that people have, that when you wake up every morning in Rachman al-Litzlan, however you get your news from Israel, the first thing you're greeted with is pictures of two or three chayalim, where they say the IDF sadly announces that killed in fighting overnight or yesterday or over Shabbos. And you see these young faces, people with their entire lives ahead of them. And what does that do to a person? How does that impact? How does that impact a person when you have that encounter? Agav, I would suggest that maybe, you know, I heard this from Rabbi Reisman this past Friday, that maybe it's not a bad idea that when we daven, to do it day by day. See, there's an idea, and I don't know if I'm right about this, I should ask my Rebbein, but there's an idea that if you daven for a nes nigla, for an open miracle, so that's problematic. You're not supposed to daven for a miracle. I have a piece on it in my first sefer about davening for miracles, how we can say, when you forget al anisim, if you're not allowed to daven for a miracle. To daven that nobody should die in a war is probably davening for a miracle. But to daven that nobody should die today, that would be a nes nistar. It would be a nes, but a nes nistar, not a nes nigla. So maybe, I don't know, maybe the tefillah will be more impactful if each of us, each and every day, we wake up in the morning and daven, Ribono Shel Olam, give us a day, give us a break, that nobody should die today. That's just an aside. Now, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that tells us, Al Karchach Ata Notzar, Yal Karchach Ata Nolad, Yal Karchach Ata Chai, that a person is created, and a person is born, and a person lives against their will. And there's a fourth thing, Va'al Karchach Ata Meis, and a person dies against their will. And therefore, Va'al Karchach Ata Asud Litein Din B'cheshbon V'Frei Melchum Achayim Lachum Adonish Baruch Hu. Against our will, we're going to have to account for things in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's a beautiful gra in Kol Eliyahu where he asks, why should a person have to face Din B'cheshbon if Al Karchach Ata Chai? He didn't ask for this. He never wanted to live in the first place. I mean, imagine, you hire someone to be your accountant, right? You say, you meet a nice young man, and I don't know, he wants to marry your daughter, and he doesn't seem to have plans for a job. So he says, I'll tell you what. You'll be my accountant. I run a business. You'll be the accountant for the business. And the man says, but I don't know anything about accounting. I've been learning in yeshiva. Like, I don't have any, like, I didn't take a single accounting class. I don't know anything. And he said, it can't be so hard. You'll pick it up. It's fine. You should be my guy. And he tells you, no, I can't. The grug gives the muscle. So imagine, like, he just gives you all the tools, whatever an 18th century accountant needed. You know, here's a ledger and here's a, I don't know. So, you know, do your thing. And then at the end of the end of the year, the boss / father-in-law, whoever it is, you know, takes a look at the books and there's just like drawings. He was just doodling for the whole year. He's like, what is this? And I told you I don't know anything about accounting. You gave me this book. I didn't know what to do with it. So what did you expect from me? Who's right? I mean, it's a bataina. He said he didn't want the job. He wasn't interested. You gave him a job that he wasn't qualified for, that he didn't want in the first place, and you expect him to do it? That's not right. So the Mishnah tells us, says the Gra, Al Karchach Ata Chai. The Neshama tells me, I'm not going to make it. You put me down in that world, it's not going to work. It's not going to go well for me. Don't put me there. And then, of course, Baruch Hu takes back the neshama at the end and he says, okay, time for Din B'cheshbon. Din B'cheshbon, I didn't ask for this. Why should I have to be punished for this? And also, the Gra points out, there are three phrases that the Mishnah uses about living. Al-Karchach Ata Notzer, Al-Karchach Ata Chai, Al-Karchach Ata Nolad, Al-Karchach Ata Chai. Notzer, Nolad, Chai. They all mean the same thing. That we're here against our will. That we never asked to be here. So the Gra explains that there's a halacha in the Maseches Bava Basra, in the first paragraph of Bava Basra. We get to some halacha. The Gra explains that there's a halacha in Bava Basra Daf Dalet where the Gemara talks about Hamakiv Chaveru Misholosh Mechosav, that if your neighbor owns properties that surround your properties, and he builds fences between your properties from three different directions, but you're still exposed on the fourth side because he was only building fences around his properties. So you're still exposed on the fourth side. you don't have to share in the cost of the three fences that he built between his properties and your properties, because they have limited utility to you. You're still open on the fourth side. Says the Gemara, though, the Mishnah, really, that if you on your own go and put a fence on the fourth side, then you have to pay for all the first three fences also. You have to pay your share in the first three fences also. And the logic is that by building the fourth fence, you're demonstrating that you really wanted all four fences. So similarly, argues the Gra, when a person is born, he didn't choose to be born. But when a person gets old and sick and fights for their life, he's showing that he wants to live. When a person goes to the doctor, he takes his medicine and he's scared of death. And he's showing that he really, really wants to live. He's interested in being here. And it's only because he demonstrates that he's happy to be on this earth that that's why he's going to have to pay din v'cheshbon. So al kol chata chay, al kol chata notzar, al kol chata yolad, nolad. But al kol chata meis, it was also al kol chata meis. You fought for your life. And therefore, al kol chata asid litein din v'cheshbon. So the Gros sees in this Mishnah that the Mishnah is trying to subtly allude to that sugya in Bab Basra about Makav Chaveru Mishalosh Ruchosa. So the Mishnah specifically chose three different lashonos of living to say that this is Shalosh Ruchos. Think of that Gemara. Only the Gra made the connection, but he alerted the rest of us to it. Rav Yonason Sacks writes in his Sefer on Bereshis and Noach, he has a Sefer on every two parshios on Chumash, got like 50 volumes or something so far, that when the Gra said this Vart, the Dubna Magid was at the table. And the Dubna Magid immediately gave a mashal to it, because that was his job. He was the Dubna Magid. So he said there was a man with two daughters, neither of whom could get a shidduch. One on account of, I guess this was a more PC mashal in the times of the Dubna Magid, but one on account of her extreme ugliness, lack of gula, I don't know, what's the word you say? Homeliness? I don't know. Whatever you're supposed to say. She wasn't, her unattractiveness. And the other on account of her extreme temper. And neither of them were able to find the shidduch. Not going to discuss which one had a harder time. And then a master shadchan came along, and he said, I have a perfect shidduch for each daughter. He found a blind man for the girl who was not so attractive, and a deaf man for the girl who was yelling all day. I was just talking to someone who said that they went for a hearing test, and the doctor said that they hear perfectly. And they couldn't understand because their wife is always saying that they don't hear anything. So discovered it's a listening problem. It's not. So the marriages were arranged and they worked out great. Everyone was happy. And then one day a doctor came to town and he takes one look at the blind man and he says, I can cure that. That's not a type of blindness. It's incurable. And he takes a look at the deaf man and he says, I can cure that. So I don't know, he flushes the wax out of the deaf man's ears and he cures him and he can hear. And the blind man, he somehow does some surgery and he gives him sight. And the lives of these men immediately take a turn for the worse. The lives immediately become miserable. So when the doctor comes to collect his bill, the patients both told him, you didn't do us any favors. Our lives are much worse than that. We were happy before. And now you've caused us all this damage. So the doctor says, no problem. I'll poke out your eyes and I'll burst your ear. I'll turn you right back. He said, no, don't do that. Oh, okay, then pay the bill. That was the Dubna Magid's mashal. Meaning, you may say you don't want it, but at the end of the day, you obviously want it. You're not willing to back out. And I get it. I understand the mashal, and I understand the idea that there comes a time in our lives that we choose to live. But like, we're supposed to do that, shouldn't we? Like, why would one have to suffer din v'cheshbon on account of not wanting to die? Why is it, in fact, correct to desire the life that God gave us if it means that we're ultimately going to pay a price for our mistakes? Meaning it's obviously the right choice. We're supposed to value life above all else. So I think the answer is, and Mesillas Yesharim writes, that we're put here for a reason. Mesillas Yesharim writes, Yisod HaChasidus V'Shorish HaAvoda HaTmima. I think they say the Vilna Gaon said that the first 11 chapters of Mesillas Yesharim don't have a single extra word in them, which is mind-boggling, because the Grah was sensitive to extra words. I always wanted to like learn through the 12th chapter really well and see what do you have in mind in the 12th chapter. Yisod HaChasidus V'Shorish HaAvoda HaTmima That the key to life is figuring out what our obligation is here on earth. And what a person should focus on in all of his efforts throughout his life. And then he goes on to say, what is the, you know, I think Rav Noach Weinberg made a very famous line in the Mesillas Yesharim. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu put us here to gain pleasure from this world, and then you go through the different levels of pleasure and the greatest level of pleasure. But I want to focus on the first part. Man is placed on this earth because he has a mission. And that, when a person figures that out, like, why am I here? That gives a person the greatest pleasure and the greatest joy. So of course we build the fourth fence. Of course we want to be here. Because at a certain point in life, we discover why we're here. And once you have that discovery of like what our goal is, what our purpose is in life, well, everything becomes clear. My wife and I were in Florida last week. And we were walking around on Thursday in Surfside. And there's a, what's it called? The Grove, I think. It's like the kosher grocery store there. And there were signs by the Grove, come on Friday between 12 and 2 and meet Ellie Beer. I never met Ellie Beer. He's a hero, right? He's got started United Hatzalah, 90 seconds. You know, that's awesome. I'd love to meet Ellie Beer. I've never met him. Friday was a fast day anyway. Leave it to us. We planned a vacation for a fast day. So we made up for it by how much we ate outside of Friday. But so 12 and 2, nothing to do on a fast day. And I was excited. So I went to meet Ellie Beer. And he was selling his book, 90 Seconds. And I didn't have a good book with me anyway, so I read the whole book over over the weekend. Amazing. Anyone know the story? Just amazing. A guy didn't graduate elementary school. He couldn't graduate. He was thrown out of elementary school. And at some point, when he was like 15, he discovered why Hashem put him on this earth. He discovered what he was meant to do. And he became a Meshugel Davracha. That he realized that these hatzalah, when an ambulance is sent to an emergency, traffic on Israeli roads is horrific. And even with the sirens on, Israeli drivers aren't always so accommodating. And it takes them 15 minutes to get there. By the time they get there, they say, oh, we pronounced him dead, and that was it. If you can get people there in 90 seconds on an ambulance cycle, so get them there in 90 seconds, they'll say, well, unbelievable. And he started this whole organization that he dedicates his life to. It's rare that a person has that kind of clarity. You know, that this is why I'm here. But I think that's part of our avoda, as we're reminded day in and day out, unfortunately, of how short life can be. And it hits so close to home because it's our brothers, it's our sisters, sometimes figuratively, oftentimes for many of us, literally, family members and close friends. So it brings to mind Moda Ani. I'm grateful for every moment that I'm here. But why am I grateful? Because I want that fourth wall. I want to build that fourth wall. But why do I want to build that fourth wall? Because I understand that there's a mission. And that comes back to the reaction. The reaction of our communities, that $1 billion comes from North America, that people who are going on missions to Israel instead of regular winter vacations to whatever, Aruba or wherever they would normally go. That's the only place anyone wants to be. It's because we have that sense of mission. We have to like lean into that, cultivate that, realize how beautiful that is, and show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we can live our entire lives with that sense of mission, in not only in the difficult times, but Be'ezra Hashem, in the good times that should come to Karuv. Everyone has a great day.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Morning, I stopped.